Can I just ask for a bit of audience participation here? If you're sat around the table, you've got a couple of extra seats on your table. Can you just put your hand up so we can see where we can fit a few more people? Brilliant. So there's some here, some at the front and the middle. The front's not a good place to be. Leggy found that out last night, if you were here. Great. So as those folk are just taking their seats, let me begin this morning by saying a very warm welcome to you. It's lovely to see you here. Our second event of our Real Lives Week. Is that coming out properly? Yeah, our second event of our Real Lives Week. We've got John Archer again. We've got... Let me try that again. We've got John Archer. And he's gonna share with us later on his life story, a bit about how he came to be where he is now, and how God has helped him and brought him along that path. We've also got Andy Mayo. Let's try that again. We've also got Andy Mayo. He's gonna sing a few songs with us. At the end of the morning, what we're gonna do is we're gonna have an opportunity for us to text in questions that I can put to John. That'll just be a 10-15 minute slot at the end of the morning. We'll be here about an hour, a number will be on that screen. So later on, if you've got a question that you'd like to text in and ask me to ask John, then I'll do that. Just plug it into the text number, and I'll get that on my phone. But without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Andy, and he's going to share a song with us.
Just we out of the swimming pool. Oh, that's better. I thought we were in a big leisure centre there for a moment. Well, this week we've got a whole week of stories, of real live stories, of real live people who've got amazing things to share with us. And this morning, well, we're going to hear the first of those. And this song, it's a story in itself. And you got to guess where it is that I was writing this song. But it was a day where things were not really going the way that I hoped they would, and things were really weighing heavy on my mind. And as I was thinking things through, something came back to me that, well, it's a piece of ancient poetry, but it's more than that. And it's something amazing that someone has said. You've got the guitar coming through there, Paul? Yeah, great. Here we go. Train rattles and sings, sighs and bounces across the edge of town. And the brakes squeal and whine, purr and hiss as we pull into the dirty station. And things weigh heavy on my mind as I think our time. Our times have changed, as I think our times have changed. And the speaker coughs and splutters, hums and crackles as we move away, as we move away. But then I think of what you said to me. Come to me and I will give you, I will give you, I will give you rest. I will give you, I will give you, I will give you rest. Come to me, come to me, come to me and I will give you, I will give you rest. Thank you. trees. Wave and flutter, bend and a rustle as we rush, as we rush, as we rush by, as we rush by. Come to me, come to me, come to me and I will give you. Come to me and I will give you. Come to me and I will give you. I will give you. I will give you rest. There goes the train.
Thank you very much, Andy. That was great.
Wasn't that good?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm John. How many people saw me last night? Excellent. Slightly more embarrassing. How many people didn't bother to come to see me last night? Oh, yeah. Very, very proud, aren't you? Yes. All sat at the back. I was brilliant. I really, really was. Even I chuckled once or twice. I thought I'd do a little bit of music. It was nice of Andy to have a go, but I thought I'll do something. So here we go, a little... I'll get serious in a minute, but I just wanted to do a little song. Don't leave till tomorrow what you can do today. Don't leave things unfinished. That's that one. It's all right, isn't it? So I was here last night, as you heard, and I did a bit of comedy and magic and things, and I picked on a few people, and you might find it hard to believe, those who were here last night, that I am actually a Christian, because I hid it very well, to be honest. But I reckon if I've got forgiveness, I might as well use it. So I just picked on Leggy, and then I said sorry this morning. That's the way it was. But I thought I'd tell you how I became a Christian, because I haven't always been this suave, sophisticated, genteel character you see before you now. Oh no, I know you find it hard to believe. But when I was young, growing up, I wasn't brought up in a Christian family. My mum and dad didn't go to church. I didn't go to church. In fact, when I was a kid, this might surprise some of you, I was a little bit of a rebel. That doesn't surprise you, does it? No, I was a rebel. My dad used to say to me things like, "Son, do the washing up," and I used to go, "Nah, I'll dry." That's how tough I was, I know. I used to deliberately mix and match my Airfix models. Do you remember those Airfix models you could get of like aeroplanes and boats? Do you remember them, fellas? Yeah. Well, I used to mix them up. I once got a model of a Spitfire aeroplane and a model of the Titanic, and I put all the bits into the same box. And I mixed them all up. I took them out and glued them together. I ended up with a big ship with wings on the side. It couldn't fly, but it never ever sunk. Ah. Not so daft, you see. Anyway, I got to 16 and I left school, mainly because they asked me to be honest. In fact, they've been asking me to since I was 12, but I managed to hang on in. I got to 16 and I left school, and this is surprising because I was quite lucky. Because a lot of my friends left school and they went on the dole. Some of my friends left school, they had 6 weeks off and they went to college. I was quite fortunate, I thought, because I left school and I started work the very next Monday morning in my first full-time job. Not many people get to do that. You know, it was really fortunate. I left school on the Friday night. Very next Monday morning, I started work as an apprentice draftsman. Have we got any draftsmen in? No. It's a very dull job, to be honest. I'd have had you down as a draftsman, Leggy. But Leggy's a man that took part in the show last night, for those who weren't there. No, draftsman, it's a dull job. I was fortunate because the company I worked for, they used to make it interesting for us to work for them, because, you know, being a draftsman's such a dull job. Basically, you draw straight lines all day if you didn't know what a draftsman does. Now, I was fortunate because I worked for this company, like I say, and to make it interesting, they used to mix it up a little bit. So, like, on a Monday and a Wednesday, we used to do horizontal lines. I know. And then on a Tuesday and a Thursday, we used to do vertical lines, right? And on a Friday, as a special treat, 45-degree angles. I used to love Fridays. Anyway, So I started working for this company. They were called Wilson Walton Engineering. They made oil rigs. That's what we made. And I used to have to draw them. And it was fantastic. I got paid for the first time in my life. 16 years old. I got £27.50 a week. I know. Obviously, I didn't have all of that money to myself. I used to have to give my mum something for my keep. But I had £27 left. I loved my mum. I had £27 and I didn't have anything to spend it on because I was 16. I hadn't got a mortgage, I hadn't got any credit cards, didn't have any bank loans, no community tax, nothing. £27 all to myself. And so this will shock some of you. I started going out and I started drinking beer. I know. To be honest, I still do. But when I was 16, I used to be able to drink a lot of beer. In fact, when I was 16, I realised I could drink in one night around about 248 pints of beer without going to the toilet. I made that up. Used to go to the toilet three or four times for about an hour at a time. But I started drinking beer because that's what you do when you're from the north and you're a guy. You know, you start drinking beer a little bit too young. And I started hanging around in a gang. Because that's what you do, right, when you're 16. You hang around in a gang and you drink beer. And we had a gang leader. Our gang leader was a lad called Mike McQueenie. Now, Mike McQueenie was the hardest lad in Stockton, which isn't difficult to do. It's only a small place. He had a nickname. If you were his friend, you could call him Queenie, but obviously you had to be his friend. Mike McQueenie looked a little bit like this. And he was our gang leader. And we used to go drinking from pub to pub. And as we went to one pub, we'd have about 35 or 40 pints in one pub. And then we'd walk to the next pub. Mike McQueenie always led the gang. He'd always go out the door first, like that. And all the rest of the gang used to follow him, you know. I don't know why we put our finger on our nose like that. It's just what we did. It was our gang thing. I never did that. I was always right at the back of the gang, like that. La 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 la. Because I was the gang idiot. Right, that was my job in the gang. Every gang has a hierarchy. I don't know if you knew this, but in sort of gang culture, there's always a hierarchy. You always have like the gang leader, right? And then you have the rest of the gang, and then you have the gang idiot, don't you, Leggy? And I was the gang idiot. It was my job in the gang to try and make the rest of the gang laugh. That was my job. And Mike McQueenie used to often say to me, Froggy, that was my nickname at school. You're called Leggy, my nickname was Froggy. Froggy Archer. To this day, I have not worked out why they called me Froggy. And Mike McQueenie used to say to me, Froggy, make me laugh. And I'd go, and he wouldn't laugh. So then I did it on my own lips. And he'd laugh. And we'd go from pub to pub drinking all this beer until eventually at the end of the night, we always ended up in a fight. Every night of the week, we'd end up in a fight. Thank you. I thought that was me making that noise for a minute. Every night of the week, we used to end up in a fight from when I'm 16 to when I'm 19. If you work that out, that is an awful lot of fights. And I remember the one I won. No, you shouldn't laugh. Honestly, she was a hard girl to fight. I'll tell you, I had to scratch and everything. And then one night we went to Teesside Airport, right? It was middle of the week. We went to Teesside Airport. And Teesside Airport, it's now called Durham Tees Valley Airport. It was called Teesside Airport then. And Teesside Airport had a bar that was open to the public. You know, you didn't have to be flying an aeroplane to have a drink there. In fact, if you were flying an aeroplane, you wouldn't be able to reach, to be honest. But and it had a roof on. It's far too complicated. I can't go into it now, but this bar was open to the public, and it was a big sort of bar, about the size of this place, except decorated. And we were all in the bar, and it was early in the evening. We'd only had about 50 pints, and we were all sat in the corner of the room, which was a little bit uncomfortable because they had chairs, but nobody said anything. And we just sat there, you know, making polite conversation, when all of a sudden, these two gorgeous girls came in through the opposite corner of the room. I mean, they could have used the door, but they were big girls. You know what I mean? There was dust and rubble everywhere. And the girls came in, and then one of the girls, I noticed, she walked in and she just sort of threw her hair back like that. I mean, she picked it up again, but she threw her hair back. And then she did half a turn, which is roughly 50% of a full turn. And she looked across to where we were, and she gave one of those special looks that women can give men, right? All women can do this look, right? By the time they get to about 16, 17 years of age, they've learned how to do this look. It's the reason that they go to the toilet in twos, is to practice on each other. It's a look that's designed to make men go crazy, right? It's a special look. All women can do it. It's all done with the eyes. It's very, very subtle. You've been giving me all night. Don't deny it. And morning, really. I shouldn't say all night. That sounded awkward, didn't it? Should have brought that to you a little bit gentler, shouldn't I? No, it's a very subtle look. She just went like that. She went, all with the eyes. Now, fortunately, right, I'd been reading a book, How to Chat Up Girls and Influence People. I've still got a copy, Leggy, if you're interested. And it said in this book that if a girl ever gives you that look, there is a look that men can give women that drives women wild. I don't know if you knew this, fellas. Did you know that? There is a special look that we have got that we can use on women when they use that look against us. You know? And fortunately, I'd learned the look. I'm going to teach you it now. Okay? Some of you might never need it, to be honest. But the secret to this look that drives women wild is you mustn't show any emotion on your face. That's the first thing. Women aren't attracted to big grins. You're not going to pull a girl going, "Hello, I fancy you." It's not going to work. You mustn't do that. They're much more attracted to that sort of cool, calm, sort of, you know, non-expression. Sort of a little bit like Sean Connery or Tom Cruise. Maybe with a little bit of Leonardo DiCaprio thrown in on the way. That sort of cool, ice, blank expression. That's a starting point. Then once you've got that right, what you've got to do is you've got to very slightly raise one eyebrow. Now, it doesn't matter which eyebrow you raise, but it must just be one of them. Because if you raise both of them, you just look shocked to see them. Like, "Hello!" And if you mix it with a big grin, you look like a ventriloquist dummy. You're like, "Hello, I fancy you," which is no good at all. Unless you want to go out with Orville the Duck, and because he's available now. Too soon, sorry. And so with me, my particular eyebrow of choice is the left eyebrow. You can use the right eyebrow, it doesn't matter. But whichever eyebrow, there's people trying this already. Can you just wait? Whichever eyebrow you use, you must then smile with the opposite corner of the mouth, all right? Just a little bit of a smile, not a big one. So with me, it's left eyebrow, right corner of the mouth, but you can do it the other way around. Then when you've done that, you've got to let your eyes smile just a little bit, very, very tiny amount, just without the rest of the face getting too involved. It looks a little bit like a squint. It's very subtle, it's like that. That's it. And then the last thing you do, right, and this is the most important bit, this is like the frame around the picture, the last thing you do is you very slightly swaggy your head from side to side. Now, I'm going to do the whole look now. Ladies, can I just suggest you grab hold of the side of your chairs? I am not kidding. When I do this look, you will want to ravish me. You're trying to look brave. Hold her back, will you? It's very subtle. I'm going to do it now. Here we go. Just jacket. Put my jacket up. Makes me look slimmer. Okay. I haven't done it yet. You're nervous, aren't you? Just here we go. I can't do it when I'm laughing. All right, here we go. This is it. Hey, be honest. You want me, don't you? I know. Now, the thing is, you've got to be careful, very careful with that look, because if you go slightly overboard, you end up looking like Patrick Moore off The Sky at Night. Do you remember him? "Hello, good evening, and welcome." Because he used to fancy a camera woman, and the wind changed. He stuck like that forever. Anyway, So she sort of went like that, and then I went like that, and then she wandered across to the bar, and they ordered some drinks, and I sort of forgot about it. Until about 20 minutes later, I looked across, and our eyes met across the room. I got them back, because you need them, don't you? I thought, right, this is it, I'm going to go and ask her out. Now, it said in this book, How to Chat Up Girls and Influence People, first impressions are very important. Apparently, women make their mind up about whether they find a man attractive or not within the first 5 or 10 minutes. Did you know that, fellas? We haven't got long. 5 or 10 minutes, and then we'll move on. So I thought, right, I've got to make a good impression. I thought, I'll wander across in my best John Wayne walk, because he was alive then and still pretty cool. So I held my stomach in, which wasn't quite so difficult to do then as it is now, and I wandered across to her like this. It took me ages. I had all this carpet behind me. That's actually acting. I'm not going anywhere. It looks good, doesn't it? Keep your eye on the microphone stand. I never go past it. It's an optical illusion. I know. I learned that at drama school. I can do other things as well. I can do a man going upstairs. Watch. He's in a lift. Anyway, Eventually, I got up to her. I said, hi, like that. Now, I knew she was impressed, right, because she put her teeth back in. She looked at me, and she went, hi. I thought, this is it. I'm going to ask her out. Now, it said in the book, if you're going to ask a girl out, don't try any of those clever lines. You know, don't try those lines like, did it hurt when you fell from heaven? Your eyes are like the stars. Don't do that. It makes them throw up. Much better. It's true, ladies, isn't it? It's much better if you're a little bit more honest, straightforward. Something simple like, hey, could I possibly take you out for coffee? Would you like to join me for lunch on Thursday? What are you doing for dinner tomorrow night? Can I come? That's a good one for students, that one, I'll tell you. That got me through college, that one line alone. Went out with some ugly women, but I ate well. So I thought, right, I'm going to ask her out. So I took a big, deep breath. I said, Mr. Grimsdale, do you want to go out with me? Now, I knew she was impressed, right, because she managed to laugh without spilling any of her beer. And then she said these immortal words I'll never forget. She said, if you want to go out with me, you'll have to go to church. Mike McQueenie stood behind me laughing like that. Right, all of the rest of the gang laughed. But I never had a girlfriend before. Did I say I was 19? I was probably 8. So I started going out with this girl. And it was great, because during the week, I could go out and get drunk. Sometimes she would come and watch. But on a Sunday, I had to go to church. Now, I don't know if you've noticed anything about churches, but they are strange places full of strange people. Have you noticed that? Have a look round. There's a few in. No need for you to look round, Leggy. And this... But all churches are the same. I mean, they differ in lots of ways. You know, you get big churches, you get little churches, you get loud churches, quiet churches, modern churches, old-fashioned churches. You get churches that make in big fashionable buildings and old buildings. You get churches that meet in schools. But they're all the same in a few simple ways. Normally, they have a bit of the front that's raised up, sometimes with a protective thing in case people throw things. And they have a load of chairs facing the front. And then a fella gets up every week, sometimes a lady these days, and moans at people. If you think that you are going down with the nasty, horrible flames, are you dirty, filthy lot? But you, lovely jubbly, very nice. And then everybody walks out at the end of the evening or the end of the morning, shakes his hand. Oh, vicar, that was lovely. Just what the other people needed to hear. And then they all go back again the next week and he moans at them again. I could not work out why people kept going to this church, but I kept going just to keep this girl happy. And I was doing great. I managed to ignore everything that was going on. I'd do things just to keep myself occupied. I'd carve my name on the back of the pews. Froggy is ace. Mike McQueenie is a little bit better, just in case he ever went. I don't think he did. Then one week, quite by accident, I didn't mean it to happen, I got a little bit bored. I had nothing else to do. I listened to him. He said, you know, a lot of people think that to be a Christian, you've just got to believe in God. I thought, what a clever bloke. Works one day a week, gets 20 odd grand a year. He tells me that. I could have told him that. And then he said, but the devil believes in God. And because he was a good vicars always repeat the important lines twice. Second time, slightly slower, with more of an American accent and a little bit of a growl at the end. The devil believes in God! A few people stood up and shouted, hallelujah! They got thrown out, had to start their own church. And I thought, well, he's right, isn't he? He's right. I know the theory, you know, the devil used to be friends with God, they fell out, he left. You know, but obviously the devil would believe in God, but that wouldn't make him a Christian, would it? Just like you could believe in a washing machine, that wouldn't make you a washing machine. I've lost your leggy, haven't I? I thought there must be more to it. I thought, obviously, you've got to be good. That must be what it is. Believe in God and be good, that must be the answer. So I cut my drinking down to about 24 pints a night, and I would only fight with people who could beat me, which was everybody apart from that girl. I was doing great. I was doing really well till a few weeks later. I'm in church again and I listened to him. He said, you know, a lot of people think that to be a Christian, you've just got to be good. I thought he's worked it out. He's probably been on a course. He says, but it says in the Bible that we don't get to heaven through good works. Now, at this point, I'm getting a bit desperate because there were lovely people at this church. They used to hug me and give me chocolate cake, sometimes at the same time, which was annoying. Stopped wearing white shirts for a while. But I thought, what's it all about? Now, fortunately, I've been a draftsman for 3 years. I'm sick of drawing straight lines. I decided I wanted to draw wiggly lines. So I packed my job in, and I went to art college. I went to art college for 4 years. First of all, I went for 3 years in London at Central School of Art and Design. But before that, I went to Middlesbrough College of Art and Design. I did a one-year foundation course. And on the course with me was a guy called Richard Nicholson. He played in a Christian band called Giant Killer, who were very nearly famous once. And I was on the course with him, and Richard played bass guitar. And we went to Whitby for a week. Not just me and Richard, the whole foundation course. That's where they take art students, Whitby. It's a very popular place to take art students. So boring, you paint things just to kill time. And we're in Whitby, and it was the middle of the week, which coincidentally was a Wednesday. I don't think it's happened since. It's like a solar eclipse. And we were in the bar Wednesday night, near the hostel where we're staying, Stainsacre Hall in Whitby. And we're in this pub, and I said to Richard, I said, "You're a Christian, aren't you, Richard?" He said, "Yes, I am." I said, "Well, will you explain it to me? I'm a little bit confused." He said, "Yeah, of course I will." You know, he said, "We'll go back to the room and I'll explain it." So we went back to the hostel. We went up to his room. He got a big black Bible out. I was a little bit suspicious. It didn't have any dust on it. I didn't think it was a real one. But he said, "John, we're going to start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start." And then he sang some Julie Andrews songs, which I thought was nice. I'd always wondered why he dressed as a nun, but I didn't like to ask, you know. He went to a very liberal church. And he said, "We'll start at the very beginning, John. First things first. God made us, God made the world." And I thought about that. And I thought, well, he must have done. To be honest, I've always found it difficult to believe that we're one big accident. You know what I mean? You look at Leggy, you think possibly, but by and large, nearly over, Leggy, we're nearly over. I'll be gone by midday. By and large, I find it difficult to believe that we're one big accident. I mean, the experts want you to believe that in the beginning there was nothing, boom, everything. Obviously, it took longer than that, but I haven't got time. The experts want you to believe, this is what the experts want you to believe, in the beginning there was a bucket of mud. Obviously there was no bucket. In fact, there was no mud. Experts believe in the beginning there wasn't even space, because space is something you can travel through it. Even space didn't exist. I don't know what they kept in it, I don't know what was on the outside of it, I can't get my head around it. And all of a sudden this nothing exploded. And all of a sudden you've got planets and stars and Earth and then the moon, right? And then some water appears as well from on the Earth. I don't know where that came from. Same place as everywhere else. Nowhere, right? And then in the water, little cells, they come, right? I don't know why, but they did. They just said, "Oh, I fancy being a cell." So then they all start floating around these little cells. I don't know if they did a dance like that. It's just how I like to think of them. And then they doubled up again. And then all of a sudden there were fish. And one of them went for a walk and he drowned because he got no lungs. And then another one, he got lungs. He went for a walk. He couldn't do it. He hadn't got no legs. But then one of them got legs and lungs, and then all hell broke loose, almost literally. And then all sorts of animals get started. Like you'd have like a giraffe with a big long neck, couldn't wear a shirt and tie. That's a waste of a neck. And anteaters. How did they evolve? They sniff up ants. Surely they'd sneeze and starve to death. I can't work that. That's the survival of the weakest. And then babies, right? Babies that grow in your tummy. Not mine, but they could, but they don't, right? And they start off, they're just the size of a kidney bean, except they taste totally different. And then they're there for 9 months. Don't think of that. Move on. They're there for 9 months. 9 months holding the breath and then they're born. I mean, how did they work that out? Hold your breath. I can't get my head around it. A blue bottle. Here's a good example. Have you ever seen an x-ray of a blue bottle? No, you haven't. You never see an x-ray of a blue bottle unless you break your arm and one lands just as you get an x-ray. Bzzz, that's the x-ray machine, not the blue bottle. He's landed. But then if you look at the x-ray, it's got like a little brain and little lungs and a tiny little kidney because they don't drink much. And if you cut one in half very, very carefully, it dies. I can't remember where I was going with all of that. It's a remarkable world we live in, an incredible universe, an incredible solar system. They discover 1,000 new insects every day, most of them in my daughter's bedroom. Deoxyribonucleic acid, do you know what that is? DNA? It's an intelligent code in every living thing. An intelligent code that links every living thing. You know, the same experts that say we're one big accident have admitted that it's impossible for an intelligent code to invent itself, because by its very nature, it implies intelligence. I can't believe that we're one big accident. Somebody must be behind it, and God sounds like a good idea, because it wasn't Kevin Keegan. I asked him once. I said, "All right, I can accept that." I said, "What's next?" He said, "The next thing is, God loves us." And I thought about that. I thought, does he? I thought, well, he must do, to be honest, because when you make something, you love it, don't you? You do. If you make something, you love it. I've got 3 kids, and I made all 3 of them, and I loved it. And, no, please, kids are in. No, but I mean, they're all grown up now, my kids. I've got 3 kids, Amy, Sam, and Tom. And Amy's the oldest. Amy is, she's 29 this year. She's marketing manager for Jamie Oliver, funnily enough. Well, it's not funny. I mean, Jamie Oliver likes it. But Amy's, she's, She's about 5'10", right? She lives in Scarborough now with her husband. And then I've got Sam. Sam's the middle one. Sam is he's taller than me. Sam is about 6'2". He's a worship leader, so I'm going to be supporting him for the rest of his life. And then I've got Tom. Now, Tom is the youngest one. Tom's 25 now, 26 soon. He's almost the same height as me. He's about... he's about that tall. Now, when they were little, my kids, I used to sometimes have to pick them up from school, right? My wife would be working, I would be off, I'd get the job of picking them up from school. And Tom's the last one I did this for, and we're going back 20 years now. And 20 years ago, not many dads picked their kids up from school, right? We're a bit more free-thinking now, but I was one of the few dads that used to do it. Most of the people picking up their kids were mums. And so I used to go and wait for him outside the playground. The mums used to stand in the playground, but I always found it a bit awkward standing with all the mums. You know, I never really knew what to say. I'd be like, hello, hiya, got a pile of iron in. So I used to stand outside the playground, and then at 20 past three, the bell would go. 25 past three, somebody would run out and get it. And then at half past three, all the kids would come out. And my little Tom would come out of school, and he'd be carrying a cornflakes box with a yoghurt pot stuck in one corner and a little swirl of blue powder paint. And he'd walk across the playground like that, past all the other mums, right up to me. And I'd go, wow, Tom, it's the USS Enterprise. I made it at school. I go, wow, that's great. We take it home, we put it in the kitchen. His mum comes home, she has a look at it. Neighbours next door come in and have a look at it. My mum and dad, they come round, have a look at it. Neighbours walking past, just complete strangers, we get dragged in to have a look at it. On a Sunday afternoon, I'd be lying on the settee trying to watch the Grand Prix with my eyes closed, because I'm sure it can be done. And he'll be sat next to me. I have spent thousands and thousands of pounds every Christmas buying really expensive electronic toys that he wanted to play with. But what does he love most of all? The cornflakes box with the yogurt pot and the blue powder paint. Why? Because he made it. And if God's made us, and I can't think of any other explanation, it makes sense. He would love us. I said, all right, I can accept that. I said, what's next? He said, the next thing is, as a human race, we have decided not to have a relationship with God. And I thought about that. I thought about my mum and dad. I love them to bits, but they weren't perfect. Mike McQueenie, definitely not. In fact, I couldn't think of one person I knew who, from the day they were born, lived a perfect life, wanted to have a relationship with God. It doesn't happen. It's the one thing you don't have to teach kids, is how to be good. How to be bad, sorry. You spend a lot of time teaching them how to be good. You never see a mum in Sainsbury's going, Billy, will you please be naughty now? You're almost seven. You've never been naughty. Look at Sarah. She's been naughty. Why can't you be naughty like Sarah? No, you can't carry my bags. Stop saying you love me. It doesn't happen. We spend our whole lives trying to teach kids to be good because there's something inside each and every one of us that makes us want to go our own way and do things wrong. You get a small child of about 2 years old, give them a kitten and a pointy stick and see what happens. They will not stroke the kitten with a pointy stick. They'll see how many places they can get that stick to go. We're just not very nice as a human race. You just have to watch the news. We live in an amazing, beautiful world, but you watch the news and we do horrific, horrible things to each other in the name of all sorts of reasons, including Christianity. We're just not very nice people. We're messed up. I said, I can see that. I said, well, what's the answer? He said, well, the answer is God wanted to make it possible for us to have a relationship with him again. So he sent his son, Jesus, to live on earth, a perfect life, something that none of us are capable of, and then to be crucified on a cross and separated from God instead of us, so that we don't have to be. And then 3 days later, come back to life to prove he'd done it. And at this point, it stopped making any sense. Up until then, it all made sense. God must have made us, and he must love us, and we're not very nice. But all of a sudden, he was talking about Jesus. And the only time I'd ever heard about Jesus was at school at Christmas, when we all used to sing, gentle Jesus, meek and mild, lovely, jubbly, baby child, Merry Christmas. You see, I thought Jesus was a fairy story, a little bit like the Easter Bunny. Sorry if I've spoilt that for you, Leggy. But you know what? I've since discovered there's more historical evidence for Jesus than there is for Julius Caesar. Did you know that? There's more historical evidence for Jesus living on this earth than there is for Julius Caesar. But nobody has a problem believing in Julius Caesar. Do you know why? It's easy. You don't have to do anything if you believe in Julius Caesar, apart from the odd school player. Et tu, Brute, stab in the back. Close the curtains, thank you. But you can't not believe in Jesus. It's like saying, I don't believe in Theresa May. We might not want to, but she's there. Jesus really did exist. He really did walk this earth 2,000 years ago. Written about not just in the Bible, but documents of the time. Talking about this amazing man called Jesus, doing amazing things. Crucified on a cross. 3 days later, rose again. Witnessed, they reckon, by over 500 people. You can't not believe in Jesus. You've just got to decide what you're going to do about it. And I said, well, what do I do? He said, well, just tell God. Tell God you've been going your own way and doing things wrong. Thank him that he sent Jesus to die for you. And tell him you're sorry. I said, what will happen? He said, he'll come and live inside. I said, get away. I mean, I'm a big bloke, but as far as I know, the meat touches the skin all the way down. No gaps for anybody else. But I thought, I'm going to give it a try. So that night, October 1979, yes, I am that old, I prayed that prayer. Stainsacre Hall in Whitby. God, I realize I've been going my own way and doing things wrong. Thank you, you sent Jesus to die for me. I want to start following you now. Amen. Then I went to bed. Next morning, I rang my girlfriend up. I said, I think I became a Christian last night. She went, oh, good, my mum can pray for somebody else. I know. I finished with her shortly after that. Not a mum. I never went out with a mum. I think I would have gone out with a mum. I quite liked a mum. But anyway, that same day, the very next day, we went to Robin Hood's Bay, which is almost dull as Whitby, and we painted pictures and took photographs. At the end of the day, we went back to the hostel. And we're having something to eat at the hostel. We're having our dinner. And my mate Ian Johnson, who didn't know what had happened, he came up to me. He said, what's wrong with you, John? I said, what do you mean? He said, there's something wrong. I said, what? He said, you haven't swore once. Now, that was a big thing for me, right? Because I was in a gang. I used to go out drinking. I used to swear all the time. I used to swear before my swear words. Sometimes I would have a whole sentence full of swear words while I just had a think about what I wanted to say. And when he told me I hadn't swore once, I thought, flipping heck, which was unusual in itself, to be honest. And I realized something had happened. And as the days and the weeks and the months went by, it became real to me. And I realized it wasn't imaginary. And I began to understand when God was talking to me, and I began to want to talk to God. It was the most amazing thing that had ever happened to me. I don't know where I'd be now if that hadn't happened. It was phenomenal. But to be honest, it didn't make sense. And I'll be honest with you now, it still doesn't make sense. There are still things about my faith that don't make sense. I watch stuff that happens on the TV, and it doesn't make sense to me. But thankfully, doing what I do for a living, I've realized that things don't have to make sense for them to be possible. You see, if you were here last night, you'll have seen me tell people what they were thinking and know what people were looking at on a die, and you'll have seen me swallow a balloon and all sorts of other things. Things that hopefully you couldn't understand. But just because you don't understand how I do them doesn't mean I can't do them. It just means you don't know. You see, any five-year-old could do all of the tricks that I did last night with about 10 years' practice. I don't have any strange, mysterious powers. I've just practiced a lot. I actually got into magic after I'd become a Christian, fully enough. Nobody got to me in time to tell me it was evil. And I started going to a little joke shop across the road from my college in London. And I started buying little tricks and books. And then the man behind the counter told me about a club where magicians met and showed each other tricks. So I joined the club. I started going to lectures. I learned more and more things until eventually I could pack my job in and do it full time. Things that seemed impossible suddenly seemed possible because I understood them. Like David Copperfield vanishing the Statue of Liberty and people floating and getting cut in half. And why did I understand? Because I started going to the right places, talking to the right people, and reading the right books. Do you know if you want to understand anything, sometimes that's what you've got to do? If you don't understand God and Christianity, maybe you need to start going to the right places, talking to the right people, and reading the right books. Sometimes God gets giggly moods. And he zaps people on the end of the bed. Not his bed, their bed. You're not allowed on his bed. He's firm but fair. He's got rules. Like the dog on the sofa. Not that I'm saying he's got a dog. But anyway, not many people hear voices and see visions. Most people start a relationship with God when they start going to the right places, talking to the right people, and reading the right books. And there's never been a better time in history to do that. Because churches all over the country, in fact, all over the world, now run courses like Alpha courses and Y courses and Just Looking courses and Christianity Explored, where you can go along and you can ask some questions, you can talk to some people, you can read some books. Surely the most important question we should all have when we walk out that door is not, where did that balloon go last night? Although that'll be on your mind, I know it will. It'll be on my mind as well, I haven't seen it yet. But The most important question we should all have is, why am I here? What's it all about? So can I encourage you to think about getting more involved, finding out. I promise you, even if you at the end of it think I'm an idiot, I promise you it's a question worth investigating at least once in your life. I'm going to finish with a little tune. This is a beautiful little ukulele. This is a 1945 Martin ukulele. I bought it last year in Nashville. I went over to Nashville, went into a guitar shop, and I saw this, and I fell in love with it. And it's 75 years old, almost as old as some of you here. And it was handmade by somebody in 1945. And when this was made, I'm sure the guy who made it didn't think it was going to play silly little tunes about putting your father in a liquidizer or, you know, don't turn left, don't turn right. I'm sure it was designed and made by the guy who made it, hoping that one day it would land in the hands of a musician that would play a beautiful tune with it. And I think it's like each and every one of you. I don't believe you're an accident. I don't believe you came out of a little factory. I think you were handmade by somebody special, and you're all designed to play your own little tune, whatever that happens to be, whether it's standing up on stage being an idiot or whether it's working in a factory. And so tonight, just to do justice to the ukulele and maybe remind you that we're all special, I'd like to finish with a little instrumental piece, a little bit of Beethoven on the ukulele. It's a minuet in B minor by Beethoven. You've been wonderful. Try and make the questions reasonably easy later. Here we go. Thank you. This is just for you, Leggy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a few more minutes. So what we're going to do on the screen now is going to come a number. That's a phone number. That if you've got a question that you'd like me to ask John, then text your question into that number. I'll get it. I'll reckon whether it's good or not. Good filter there. We've got about 5 minutes about 5 minutes to fill. So I'm going to ask Andy to come and sing another song for us. And then if you want to text your question in, do send it. Thanks.
Brilliant. Well, we've been hearing about the heart of everything being that there's a God who is there, who we're made to know, and how that we can't know him, but how that God has come to us in the person of Jesus to make it possible for us to know him. It's the story of the most lavish, generous love that's ever been known. And this song is called Lavish. Lavish love that drives out fear. Lavish love embracing near. Lavish. Lavish love. Adopting love that calls you child. Adopting love pure undefiled. Lavish. Lavish love, his love endures forever, and his faithfulness stands for all time. forever love untamed by years. From out of this world, love, the life appears. Forgiving love dies on a cross. Forgiving love, my gain, his loss. His loss. His love endures forever, and his faithfulness stands for all time. Yeah, his love endures forever, and his faithfulness stands for all time. Life birthing love to last breath. God revealing love conquers death. Conquers death. Cause his love endures forever. And his faithfulness stands for all time. Yeah, his love endures forever, and his faithfulness stands for all time. Lavish, lavish love. Lavish, lavish love, lavish love, lavish
John. So thank you for all your questions. Some of them were good. I think the most popular question was,
yes,
where did the balloon go?
It's a very, very good question. It's a question I have regularly, to be honest. I wish it was more regularly, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know, to be honest. I'm having about 3 a week. All red ones. My doctor said I should eat more greens. That's an old joke about snooker balls, but I like it. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you. It's a secret. I can't tell you how I do my tricks. I don't care, really.
So here's a question. How long have you been doing magic for, then?
Professionally for 20 years, and I was doing it semi-professionally for about 10 before that, and then as a hobby for 3 or 4 years before that. So what's that, 30-odd years? 33 years? 34 years?
And at what point...
Don't go, wow, that's, you know...
Well, that's almost as old as I am.
It is. It's a long time, yeah.
At what point in your life did you think that a career in magic was the way that you needed to go?
I was probably thinking about it for about 5 years before it happened. So I've been doing it for 20 years professionally now. So for about 5 or 6 years before then, I was a police officer. I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? Yeah, leggy's gone off me now. And I was a police officer for 10 years, and while I was in the police, and I was thinking about whether or not I could leave the police and go full-time, and I was fortunate enough to get medically retired, so that decision was sort of made for me. But, probably 5 or 6 years. It's a big jump to go full-time in anything self-employed. So,
and what was your role in the police service?
I did general policing for the first 5 years, and then the second 5 years, I was school liaison officer, which was great. I went around schools doing magic tricks for the kids in a uniform. So that was great. I was just using it as training, basically.
Brilliant.
At the expense of the taxpayer. Thank you very much.
Thinking about your faith then, what did your friends think when you told them that you've become a Christian? Was that a process? I mean, did you just kind of go into the gang and say...
I didn't tell them all straight away, I don't think. I was, I wasn't a great... When I first became a Christian, I wasn't a great... I'm still not a great Christian, to be honest. You know, we're all hopeless at it. We just put up a front and pretend we're good, don't we? But so I'm as hopeless as everybody else. But I wasn't great. I remember I became a Christian on the foundation course, and the very next year I went to Central School of Art and Design, and they didn't have any. I couldn't find any Christian union or anything. And I met one guy, an Irish lad from Belfast, who was a Christian. He said we should start a Christian union, and I was like, what? And he said, yeah, and he said, we'll do some posters, we'll have a meeting. And he designed these posters because he was doing graphic design. And we were going around the hall putting them up. I remember putting one up, and a big group from my course came around the corner. As they came up, I went, I'm just pulling this poster down, Christian Union. I was like, denying Christ at every opportunity while the cock was growing. But I got better. I wasn't particularly great. People found out, really. They found out you're going to church and also some people just noticed I was different and started asking awkward questions, so I couldn't hide it, even though I probably wanted to sometimes.
And
if I could go back, I would do it different. I'm not saying that's the way forward. If you become a Christian, don't be ashamed of it. But it's just I was hopeless.
So another question actually relating to that.
Just tell me if I'm being too honest.
No, that's fine. Right, it's good to
because I can say that was a saint if you want to.
Yeah, no, I prefer it, but we'll run with it.
I'll lie a bit more on the next question.
it's a great question actually, because all of us at one point go through a really really difficult time, and a time where you feel that actually God's not there. How do you get through those?
I've never been through any difficult times. My life is pretty much
perfect,
I'm
exactly
really.
The same. Mm.
It's
bed
easy,
of roses,
isn't it? Life's
bed of
easy.
Roses.
No difficult times at all.
Next question.
Was that better? No, I go through difficult times all the time. But to be honest, I find that difficult times are the times when God becomes closer to me. So actually, I find difficult times are the nicer times for me in having a relationship with God. I know that sounds a bit weird, but when everything's going really easy and there's no problems and you're not worried about, obviously self-employed, I think, am I going to get any work next month? Am I going to, but when things are great and work's coming in and family's all happy and everything, those are the times when it's quite easy to forget that God's looking after you. Yeah. And suddenly when things go wrong, that's when I suddenly realise I want to pray and I want to talk to God, and that's when I'm much aware of his voice, telling me he's looking after me. So I quite like those things, I suppose. So is that weird? Yeah, it is, isn't it? I don't like them. I don't like them. But those are the times when I possibly learn more about God and myself than when I'm having it easy.
So would you say that, to you, your faith is not so much a action thing? In other words, I'm a Christian because I go to church. I'm a Christian because I pray. I'm a Christian because I read my Bible.
Yeah. It's more most of those things I fail to do, so that's definitely not why I'm a Christian.
But is there a sense in which it's more of a sense in which you know who God is and you have a relationship with him? He affects your life.
Yeah, definitely. The other things are things that I feel I should do because... they're good to do for me spiritually. It's good to meet with other Christians. I'm away a lot of weekends, so my home church is... I get to my home church much less than I get to other churches, to be honest. I'm not there this weekend, obviously. But when I can get there, and when I can get to the midweek, I do them. They're very good for me. But certainly it's not what my faith is based on.
Yeah.
My faith is based on... It is a relationship with God. But then the other things really help me to live out that faith.
Yeah.
So... Reading the Bible and praying and stuff are all things that help me work with that relationship, if you like.
So I'm going to finish on this question then. How do you feel God talks to you today?
You know what? It's really hard when people say, I'd love to say that it was an audible voice, but it isn't. And it's just through having a relationship with God, I sort of And some people say, well, isn't that just like having a conscience? It's not like having a conscience, because sometimes God tells me things that my conscience would never ever tell me to do. And sometimes God tells me things that are, you know, seem like totally counterintuitive to anything I would think myself. So, but it is, yeah, it's just experiential, and it's just a heart and a mind thing of, you know, God speaking to me. And he can speak to me as I'm driving the car thinking about something, or, you know, he speaks to me a lot just through films that I go and watch, or, you know, something I see on TV. God, you know, I'll suddenly have a realization of something and think, that's God showing me that. It's not something I would particularly pick up on. So, yeah, it's really hard that God, you know, when you hear people who hear God's voice physically, I just think, wow, that must be amazing. But, you know, that's never happened to me. But, you know, but I don't need it to, because I feel pretty confident he's there anyway.
John, thank you ever so much for coming this morning.
And thank you for having me.
And last night as well. It's just been so wonderful having you. Thank really you. Refreshing to hear your comedy. And
give us a tune on the uke. Go on, before you go.
No.
Okay.
But thank you ever so much. It's just been really
thank
lovely.
Thank you. Thank you, Leggy.
Leggy asked me last night whether he can come on tour with you. Yeah. Just to finish then, there are a couple of things that I just want to invite you to, all of us to, over the coming week. As you know, as I said last night, this is the beginning of a real lives week. We've heard how God has broke into John's life all those years ago, how God has become a major part of John's life. It's part of his real life. God is his real life. And there are loads of people coming up over the week from Wednesday. It's not working. I'll use this one. There's loads of people starting Wednesday who are going to share their real life stories. So we've got an Olympic rower. If you've got a flyer like this, this is what our real lives are all about. We've got an Olympic rower. Her name's Debbie Flood. We've got Pete Sampey, who's I'll use that one actually.
I think they're just trying to tell you that maybe you should shut up. I don't know.
Maybe they'll listen to you. No, right. So you've got Pete Sampey, who was a child prodigy, a cellist, got to grade 8 at the age of 10, and then threw it all away for a life of motorbikes, a life away from God, and currently he's a full-time missionary. But he's struggling with cancer. He's recovering from cancer. His whole life is about how God has taken him through really real challenges. Billy McCurry, as you probably will have guessed from the flyer, he was a UVF terrorist. Went to the Mays prison for murder at the age of 16. And yet God, in the middle of the Mays prison, the most infamous prison in this country, God spoke to him. And he's going to share his life of how God became a big part of his life. And Jeff Spence, another Irishman, he was a businessman in the city, ended up working for the Chancellor of the Exchequer when the financial crisis hit, and he was one of the guys who was at the Chancellor's right-hand man, trying to make decisions that would affect the future of the financial stability of this country. They've all got real lives, but what holds these testimonies, these stories together, is the work of God in their lives, how they're able to say, do you know, God is not just a myth. God is not just someone who tells us to do things. He's real. He's living. He works in my life. Those are going to be the stories. The details are in this flyer. Do take one. Do try and turn up. They're great. You don't have to turn up to every one of them. They're great real life stories. The other thing I'd like to challenge you to do is not to leave this room without considering, well, what's my next step? We've got a little flyer, little postcard size flyer called Connect. And it's basically an invitation by us. From us as a church to connect. You can just fill out your details on that flyer on the back, your name, your email, your phone number, And there are four things you can do. You can just tick a box saying, tell me more. We'll give you a shout. And we can say, you know, we can invite you to our Christianity Explored group, which is a great group, good food. It's at my house, so it better be good food. And it's a group where we just sit around, have a chat, watch a 10-minute video, and discuss it. It takes you through the life story of Jesus, Christianity Explored. That's a great group. You can tick Count Me In. I want to, you know, become more a part of this church. That's another option. Shout Me a Coffee is my favorite one. It means I can take you out, or I can get someone to take you out for a coffee. I'll be buying, or get someone else to buy. And we can just chat. Well, what's the next step? How can we have a relationship with God? Know God for ourselves personally, because obviously John said that's possible. The real lives guys, they'll all say it's possible to know God concretely for myself. And they are not idiots, I promise you. Well, John maybe. I've got one back, John. Look at that.
A funny one would have
been. Leggy! That's always a good comeback. So Shout Me a Coffee, that's a good option. Or see you soon. That's, you know, if you want to take it at your own pace. But just say, you know, let's keep in contact. Put your name and details down. See you soon. There's a box at the door. Just fill out your details. Pop this in the box. We'll get hold of you. Be lovely to do that. And if you can't wait and you want to grab John or myself or Andy afterwards and just say, well, you know, to Andy, what were you singing about? What was that song about? Do grab him. He'd love to chat. Guys, thanks for coming. It's been really amazing. Thanks too for the setup team and for those of us who have been hosting this evening. The coffee, the nibbles have been absolutely wonderful. Guys, we'll finish there. You've been a star. Thank you.